Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
So good to have you with us, everybody. It is Monday, May 15th, 2017. We have people dialed in from all over the country and all over the nation. It's so good to have you here with us. Appreciate you. And if you dial in early and you want to chat with us, I like turning on the microphone in advance of the program and chatting with some of our listeners if we get a chance to do that. It's always nice. Don't always have the ability to do that, or I have the ability, don't always have the time to do it based on all that's going on. But we like it when you dial in early and we get to connect with our listeners. Really appreciate you being here. The hot topic today, I am really interested in, but there has been a slight shift. So I'll talk about that, excuse me, in just a minute. Let's get on with some of the things that we start off with. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. And who is it for? It's for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Welcome your feedback. Our commitment is to you to bring you timely information on an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. A lot of people listen while they're commuting in the car. They'll listen to 2-3 podcasts or while working out. That's a good one. It's kind of send that workout karma my way. I need some more of that. Anyway, appreciate you telling others about it. Tell them to join in and listen. Again, the Hot Topic segment today. Now, for those of you that heard me speak this last week, at the Great River Conference in Memphis, there was an amazing speaker there, Deborah Jasper of Mindset Digital. Probably one of the most interesting dialogues ahead. Now, we invited Deborah to join us today. However, Deborah forgot that she was coming on. We promoted it out while there. But she's speaking at the American Bankers Association today. And so she got excited. Didn't look at her calendar all the way through, check it all through. She's a busy gal. She travels all around the country like I do, speaking at a lot of conferences. I'm empathetic that you want to go do something. You find out, oh, I can't. So anyway, we had to postpone her. We are rescheduling her for another day. So for those of you who dialed in to listen to Deborah Jasper, she will not be with us today, but we'll be having her on as soon as possible. But who we do have on is Ari Karen. It really worked out good, because the Financial Choice Act 2.0 just made it out of the Senate Banking Committee and is going to the House, or I'm not sure which way. Anyway, it made out of one committee, is going to the Congress. I believe it's going into the Senate. So there's some significant things about this that everybody needs to be paying attention to. It's very timely, and we have Ari Karen of Offit-Kerman coming on to talk about it in the Hot Topic segment. I caught up with Ari on Saturday, pre-recorded the interview, and so I know what's in it. And I'm telling you, you don't want to miss this Hot Topic segment. It's going to be really good. Anyway, special thank you goes out to our sponsors, of course, Arch MI, the creator of the Innovative RateStar program. And we've got Kim Miller, who is one of the key people at organizing and making this Great Rivers Conference so successful, was with us. And then also we had a number of other people that were participating. Lisa was there. I can't say enough about it, but we're going to have Kim come on a little bit later in the program and talk about some of the things about the conference and her impressions about it and give an update. There's some more innovative stuff done at this conference than I've seen in a long, long time. But anyway, Arch MI, we got off that topic. RateStar program, innovative. Go check it out. We'll be playing an ad on how you can learn more in a minute. Motivity Solutions, providing real-time reporting and dashboards and scorecards. I don't know how people run a business without that kind of data, but some do. But you can do a whole lot better if you have this data. So check out Motivity Solutions, talking about that with the KPI of the week a little bit later in the program. Also, Velma, the electronic marketing assistant. It's a very effective, it's the virtual electronic marketing assistant. That's what Velma is an acronym for. It's a very efficient, effective mortgage marketing and email platform. Also, Simplifile, real-time electronic communication exchange, and the Mortgage Collaborative, power of the network. And last but not least by any means is D&H. So much going on with D&H these days. You know, I talk about this regularly, but I am very excited about the future of D&H, especially since they were acquired by Vista and being combined with MyCyst. And when you bring MyCyst and D&H coming together, I'm not sure. I know they're trying to get that deal closed as soon as possible. But when that gets closed, folks, watch out. This is going to be a very strong company in the marketplace, and I encourage you to check it out. You can go to dh.com. I'm sure that'll be changing at some point in time once the merger is complete, but dh.com, or call them at 1-800-815-5592. Very grateful to have them and Arch and Motivity and Simplifile and Velmo, everyone as members of this podcast as sponsors. So let's go to what's going on for upcoming MBA conferences. We have another state conference this week, Ohio MBA State Conference. I will be flying there. I'm doing a 3-hour sales training session there. It's more talking about how to be, you know, dealing with the new digital world we have. I'm speaking for 3 hours on it tomorrow afternoon. If you're at this conference, look forward to seeing you there. Come up and tell me that you're a listener of the radio program. Always very encouraging when we hear from those in the audience attending these conferences. Hey, I listen to your program regularly. I love that. Or listen to it infrequently, or where I'm new, or whatever. Yeah, just let me know that you're there, and I'd love to connect with you. Also, the Motivity Solutions Conference is coming up. The Users Conference is June 19th. Seeing as I've been now speaking at four conferences back-to-back here, I'm almost getting conferenced out, but I am looking forward to this last of the speaking engagements this week, and it'll be in Ohio. So tomorrow, the 16th, I'll be speaking, and please check it out and come on over if you're in the area. Check out all the MBA conferences and education material that's available on the MBA website by Googling that, and while you're there, check out Mortgage Action Alliance. So let's get into it. But when we're talking about conferences, I want to get Kim Miller on the phone here. Kim is just someone I got to – Kim, are you there? You dialed in. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us this morning.
I'm here, David. Thanks for letting me come on. I'm here.
You bet. Well, I got to tell you, you and Lisa knocked it out of the park. For all the state directors listening to this radio program, and I know a lot do, for those of you that are organizing conferences, you got to take note of what these guys did, what Lisa and Kim did to make this conference out of the park. I speak at a lot of conferences. They're all good. I love all of them. But there were some things that were very innovative. This, the way you did the badges, those clickers, the loop. Explain what that was. That was so innovative for exchanging and networking.
So we introduced, and thanks. And one of the reasons that it was fantastic, David, is because you attended, and I can't thank you enough for being our keynote speaker and for kind of wrapping up the end of the. At the end of the day, you spoke, but you wrapped up all the content beautifully, and then I think you did 3 breakout sessions for us.
Yes, I did. That was a busy day.
You were very busy, and we thank you so much. But, yeah, this year we introduced what's called Loop Technology, and that's LOOPD. It's something your listeners may want to look at, especially conference organizers. But it's just an electronic way of registering everybody, number one, for the conference, kind of taking the old manual paper registration out. And then, for a better word, but around everybody's lanyard and name tag, we had a little device, and it was a device that's used to exchange contact information with your attendees. So it was a way of kind of, you know, how we all carry around our business cards and we're handing them out to everybody. This was a way you didn't have to do that, but you could exchange information with each other by simply clicking. So
that was amazing.
Feature.
I
got tickled at watching people, you know, getting it. They'd click, and then the contact information would appear on their phone simultaneously from our Great River MBA app, and it was great. And another benefit that was good was we had the little boxes sitting at each exhibitor's booth, and as people walked by and as attendees came by and had conversations with all of the exhibitors and sponsors, that information was captured electronically, and we were able to send out list of folks that attended your booth or that you spoke with, and so it was fantastic technology. That one big
Well, Arch MI, Arch MI had a booth there. You were in the booth. You work with Arch MI. And it was really – I wanted to check to see, have you had a chance to look at it? I know you just got back from the conference. Have you had a seat? Did the looped technology work in your booth as built? Did it really actually pull it in?
Fantastically. It was – we got a list the day after. So I showed everybody
wow.
that attended and all the sponsors the day after, a full list. The times that they walked by the booth, the number of times they came by the booth. So at Arch, we're very, very pleased. We had a great showing. We had regional managers from Southeast and our central division there, and it was a fantastic conference, well attended.
You were amazing, Kim. The organization, the time that goes into this, I'm not sure anyone can really appreciate it, but you did an awesome job. It was wonderful to see you in person. And so kudos to everybody there that made that conference so effective and so powerful, and thanks for the kind words. And I appreciate you taking the time to dial in. I know you're sitting in the parking lot of a client. You're about ready to walk in, and I encourage you folks, if you have Kim as the possibility of having a rep, she serves. What markets do you serve, Kim? What areas?
I'm in the Tennessee market. I'm in Tennessee, but you know, any of your listeners have any questions, feel free to contact me or Dave at the show there, and we'll get you in touch with your account manager in your local area.
So how can people get a hold of you, Kim? What's the best way?
The best way is by phone, area code 615-424-1500. That's my cell phone. That's the only phone I use, and I'll get everybody hooked up. So I appreciate you letting me come on today, and thank you again, David, for your wonderful performance and all that we learned from you.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. Kim, good to have you with you. Thanks for taking time to dial in. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. Well, folks, we're Joe Farr. We'd normally go right off to Joe Farr, get a market update, but guess where Joe is? It's a gorgeous day in Central Texas, as Sam will attest here shortly. So Joe's at a conference, the AMBA golf event today. Now, I'm not sure I'm supposed to announce that, but anyway, Joe loves golf, and he gets out there, and he's a much better hacker than I am. That may be a disadvantage to him. He's probably a much better golfer, but anyway, here's the update of what's going on in the markets. Let's take a look at what's happening today. Today, we have the Empire State, or the New York State Empire Index. It came out at 8:30, and I'm looking over at the MBS quote line website right now. This tool, folks, is so effective when trying to find out what's going on in the markets. It brings you the data right up front, and so that came in. It was the consensus was the Empire State Index was coming in at a positive 7.0. It was the previous month, it was 5.2, and it actually came in at a negative 1. That was a little bit of a surprise. We saw the markets react a little bit to that. Then also the National Association of Home Builders survey of home builders came in better than expected. I would have anticipated that. It was 68 for the number. Again, any number above 50 is considered positive. This one came in at 70, so that was positive. Last week, mortgage rates ended up the week a little lower than where they started the week. A rise in rates early in the week was more than offset on Friday due to the weak economic data. So a little bit of weak economic data kicked it back down, so that's how we end up the week. You know, with anti-EU or European Union candidate being defeated, Le Pen being defeated in the French election last Sunday, we saw investors react on Monday by buying more risky assets like stocks. And as a result, they sold off the safer end assets, and the MBSs specifically. So we watched MBS prices fell and mortgage rates rose. So MBS prices fell, mortgage rates rose last week on some of that news. But then again, we saw some recovery towards the end of the week. Now, Treasury auctions today, this week, we have the Tuesday, we have the Treasury auction. And which one is that? I'm looking at here and I'm not seeing that, which Treasury auction is. But we also then have on Wednesday, so Tuesday, Wednesday, we have the Treasury auctions. And then on Friday, the economic data was, last week was pretty good. And what we're going to see is the reaction to that. Now, what was most interesting was the JOLTS number, the job opening and labor turnover survey, came in very good. So we see a stronger growing jobs market. So on Thursday, we also saw jobless claims came in low. Inflation seemed to be on the rise. And the core producer price index, the core PPI, rose more than expected. None of this was good for the mortgage rates. And that's why we saw mortgage rates the better than expected data come in strong. But then again, things changed on Friday when we saw the core PPI, CPI, fell 1.9%. So the consumer price index, the core CPI consumer price index, actually fell. And for the first time, it was below 2%, and that's the first time since October 2015. You can only imagine the amount of politicizing that went on with that. Anyway, during 2017, rates have trended lower. January is 2.3, February is 2.2, March 2.0, April 1.9. So it's really interesting to kind of see the trajectory of watching rates, which is consistent with what Les Parker said was going to happen when he did his projections at the first of the year. Now, he did say we're going to see things bottom out and then start heading up, so we'll see what happens with that. Of course, I mean, predicting the weather in Texas or any of the other states, a lot of the other states where you see a lot of change or changing rapidly, so we'll see what happens. But we're going to have Les on talk in just a minute about what's going on. MBS prices improved by 3/8 on Friday. So this week, again, we have – it's really light on data. I was wrong, by the way. The Treasury auctions were last week. All right, so much for reading my notes here. I was looking for it. I thought it was – he was referencing the notes here that he – Joe Gaby, he was referencing this week. That was last week we had the Treasury auctions. I should know that. I look at this frequently enough. I should have known that. But anyway, what we have is housing starts, industrial production. That's all coming out tomorrow. Jobless claims and the Philadelphia Fed Index on Thursday. So, like Les Parker said, I hope you don't get rid of Joe because the way you do some of these sometimes, it's good that Joe does that. He does a great job. And folks, if you have not checked out the MBS Quoteline website, be sure to do so now. It's good to have you with us. We're going to be right back with Les Parker's note right after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us. I'm looking at people dialed in literally from all over the country. Southern California, 949-752. We got you on here, area code 724-934. So good to have you dialing in. Those are the couple that dialed in here just at the last minute. Appreciate you telling others about the podcast. And then when you see me at one of these conferences, it's always so encouraging when you walk up and tell me what's going on. So what we try to do is provide you great content. Les Parker has been such a dear friend and probably one of the recognized prognosticator of where interest rates are going, predictor of where interest rates are going. And we want to get Les's take on what's going on right now. So here's a macro look at the markets with Les Parker.
Thanks, Dave. This is Market Logics Live, sponsored by Loan Logics. It comes from a ball down under, where calls do flow and shorts chunder. Be careful about calling the market stupid. Live by the principle, the market is what it is. Deal with it. Consider the correlation between stocks and bonds. They can, for short periods of time, be inversely correlated due to rotation or liquidity issues. At other times, they are strongly correlated due to comparable yield shifts, even safety trades from world events. The VIX is currently at an extreme. So what? Regardless of how extreme a market gets, the trend is your friend. Beware of buying and selling extremes. There is no such thing as a free lunch. But you can lose your lunch. These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Do you come from a land down under?
I love his music parodies. They're really good. always ties into the message. So if you get his newsletter, he talks about this and he says, gets the tune. And so, it, you know, a lot of people are drawn to just read Les material just to try to figure out what that name that tune. But anyway, appreciate Les Parker and the team at Lone Logix bringing us this update. Want to hear from Simplifile, Nancy Alley and the team there at Simplifile have a great product. I want to hear about that. And then we're going to be back talking about some of the things that are coming up. I want to get kind of tease up Ari's segment regarding the Financial Choice Act 2.0. Talk about that in just a minute. We'll be right back after a word from Simplifile, Nancy Alley and her company.
Simplifile has technology that gives you the ability to collaborate with settlement agents via real-time chat and messaging, allowing you to track changes, send, receive, and validate documents, as well as obtain status updates and deal with issues as they arise. All of this in a real-time electronic communication exchange. And best of all, you have a complete audit trail of all communications. To learn more, go to Simplifile.com or call our good friend Nancy Alley at 1-800-460-5657.
Yeah, they got to raise some good technology. I really encourage you to check him out. They're really good, some amazing stuff. All right, so here's what's going on. Alice Alvey is tied up in some meetings. There's some exciting things that she has going on, really exciting things going on right now. And I can't talk about it just yet, but I'm sure she will be talking maybe as early next week, some of the things happening in her world, and I'm very excited about that. But in the meantime, normally she would be on here talking about the Financial Choice Act. And this is, gets into a little bit of the presentation that I did that Kim was referencing while there. So, you know, you guys will get a chuckle out of this. These slides. So at the conference in Memphis, the first speaker out of the gate was Deborah Jasper. Again, we're going to have her back on. And what do you think she's talking about? What makes for an effective presentation and slides and PowerPoints? So the first one out of the gate sets the bar so high that I felt so bad for the next person who came on right after that because she absolutely shot a hole through bullets. Play on words there. But she says, don't use bullets like that. Have a lot more graphics. So I listened to her presentation. I went up to the room and tore my presentation apart and rebuilt it between then and when I spoke later that afternoon. But what's going on, if you can see my slide deck, I'd love to share these with you. And if you email me or write me, I'm happy to add you to the Dropbox where I am sharing these slides with those that were in attendance. So here's what's happening. We have really two things happening as it relates to the changes in CFPB and Dodd-Frank. We have both a legislative initiative and a legal initiative. Now, what's going on the legal side is we have the full court review. How did Ari pronounce it? It's French, it's Latin, en banc, en banc. So anyway, it's en banc is how I pronounce it. That's down here in Texas. But it's a full review of what's going on with the PHH case. Now, if you look at the court that made up the initial opinion, it was 2-1 with a majority Republicans in the appointments. The overall court is 7-4 Democrats versus Republicans. And so it's going to have a much more of a political view with the majority being the majority of the people in the court being appointed by during the Democratic administration. So we may see the legal challenge with PHH change. Now, I want to get Mitch Keiter back on here and talk about that because he represented PHH. He's a good friend as well. Listen to these guys and get updates on it. But we see that challenge coming up, and we'll see what happens with that. So think about it this way. PHH and Dodd-Frank has two aspects of being challenged, legislative and legal. So we know that the legal side of it is being challenged and reviewed, and we'll see what happens with that. A lot of different things what happens. But here's the deal. If the court sidesteps the constitutionality, which, again, is the big issue here, was CFPB constitutionally set up under the U.S. Constitution? Was it done properly? Well, the review board that looked at it said no, they were not. Again, that's being reviewed. We'll find out what happened. Now, if they sidestep the constitutionality of this, the genie is not back in the bottle. In other words, we could see some changes here. Trump could fire Director Cordray, especially in light of recent events where he fired Director Comey from the FBI. It is distinctly possible we could see Trump fire Director Cordre, and he'll deal with the legalities of it later. Now, he could also petition for a declaratory judgment and approach it that way. But the companies that are being investigated by CFPB, most likely they're going to press the issue if it's serious and a flagrant. But if it's not so much so, we're going to see them. Ari already said he's seeing some the CFPB back off based on some of this most recent action. Because I think the CFPB, and I asked Ari this, is are they going to take a fairly aggressive stance on this? And he says, no, he anticipates they'll be staying behind the scenes. So, again, we're going to hear about the legislative update in the Hot Topics segment. We'll be talking about that. So, stay tuned all the way to the Hot Topic segment. I thought you'd find that interesting. The legislative and the legal, it became real clear to me as I started studying it in preparation for my speech in Memphis at the Great River Conference. Appreciate you so much being here with us. And let's see here. We are looking at some of the information that's out there. One of the things, we got the Mortgage Collaborative event coming up, and I want to just play a brief ad on that, and we're going to be right back with Sam Garcia getting an update on all the headlines. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief message.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
So good to have you with us, everybody. And we have Sam Garcia of Mortgage Daily on the call, mortgagedaily.com. Check it out. Sam, good to have you here, friend. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Got some good stuff going today, but
wow,
and, you know, we actually, I won't talk too much about it, but we did put out a Wire news story, an interview with Cordre, and, you know, they're pressing him about, the interviewer pressed him about that fact that Director Comey was, you know, fired, and, you know, how did that impact him? So it's an interesting reading if you get a chance to take a look at it. He seems to be pretty laid back, though, during this time. So anyway, the Mortgage Bankers Association, they released last week their MBA mortgage finance forecast for May. The outlook has second quarter refinance volume coming in at $147 billion. The trade group actually raised their estimate for the second quarter refinances from 143 that they predicted in April. So they're a little more optimistic. They nudged up their overall forecast as a result for this year, including refinances and purchases, to about $1.6 trillion is what's expected at this point. As you know, we maintain the Mortgage Market Index, which provides a peek into likely upcoming originations based on rate lock volume and open close. And for the week leading up to Mother's Day, new business fell 11%. You know, if we used seasonal factors, we would have adjusted it down, because it always does seem to get much more quiet as we get towards Mother's Day and people are heading out of town to be with their mothers. And hope you had a good one, by the way, but as best you could.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. But
Yeah,
but, you know, I know you got two daughters, right? And you had your wife, so
yes,
everybody was celebrating that. That's good.
We did.
So that decline that I'm telling you about that we had, let's see, it was 11% from the prior week, and it was broad-based. Both refinances and purchases fell. One category that held up, didn't change at all from the prior week, was jumbo business. That's kind of a volatile category, but it's always fun to watch where it goes. CoreLogic reported that 30-day delinquency, including foreclosures, was 5.0% in February. That was down from 5.3% the prior month. So a little bit improvement in loan performance there. Wells Fargo, at its Investor Day conference last week, we did a Wire story where they covered what was said at that Investor Day conference in San Francisco. Senior executives get up and talk about, you know, what's going on. And, of course, they talked about the fake account scandal and how it's impacted business. But something I found interesting from that story was that Frank Caudill, who is the senior vice president for consumer lending, he talked about improving the company's application process process. And when he was talking about that, he highlighted Quicken Loans, which we all are familiar with as far as their Rocket Mortgage, and it's been successful. And he also highlighted Loan Depot, where they recently talked about launching Mello. So Wells Fargo is rolling out an online and mobile mortgage application process that'll pull borrowers' information from the bank's own system and from outside data providers. And that means that customers will have to submit fewer documents themselves, speeding up the process. So kind of got a little bit of a wave happening here with companies trying to make the process a little simpler and faster for borrowers. We'll see where that goes. A report from Moody's indicated that there has been diversification among mortgage servicers, as most of us are aware of. Large servicers have given way market share to smaller non-bank servicers. And Moody's pointed out that with smaller portfolios, you know, smaller servicers handling, you know, more of them handling the servicing, the risk of failure of one of those servicers, it poses less risk to the, you know, loans that are in mortgage-backed securities because, you know, nobody's carrying as big of a portfolio versus something like Ocwen. When something happens, it impacts a lot of loans. Also, small servicers can more easily adapt to regulatory changes. But that same report also highlighted how smaller servicers don't really have the financial resources and access to capital when times get kind of tough that their bigger bank-owned counterparts have. So that was kind of the downside of it. But overall, they said that the diversification actually is good and we're better off as a result. Fannie Mae announced last week that more than $3.6 billion in loans are for sale. One of two offerings is for $613 million, and that's non-performing loans. And then the second offering is for just a little over $3 billion, and those are re-performing loans. And Fannie is selling those loans from its investment portfolio, which was last reported at $269 billion as of March 31st. Over at Walter Investment, they reported $5.2 billion in first quarter originations. And, you know, I know there's a lot going on with their net income and earnings, but, you know, we obviously focus primarily on production. And at Walter, that production was down 7% from the fourth quarter. And that's pretty good because, you know, what we've seen from most lenders that have reported this quarter, for the first quarter, that they had more of like a one-third drop between the fourth and the first quarter. So the 7% drop over at Walter was actually pretty good. So on the other side of that is that Impact Mortgage, where they reported originations at $1.6 billion for the first quarter. That was down by almost half from the prior quarter. So that was a huge drop.
Wow.
That was bigger than most lenders we cover, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. That's significant.
And we saw that come in the last quarter, too, because we actually look at the application volume and try to get an idea where the next quarter is going to be. And that's pretty much where it looked like when we covered the fourth quarter numbers. So we'll see if they can bring that back. But they're very happy with what's going on with their non-QM business, and it's taken up a bigger portion of their retail origination. So we'll see how they come out with that in the long run.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's interesting to see the drop, but it sounds like it's been an intentional reorganization focusing on the higher margin products. So, makes sense.
Yeah, we'll see how they hold up in the next quarter, huh?
Yeah, see what their earnings look like. So, good stuff, Sam. I love the data. Now, look how you're always looking at the data. You're looking at the news story. Ellie Mae's millennial report, that is pretty interesting. I had Joe Tyrell on, and then also Jonathan. We got recordings of their interview that we're going to play down the road, but very interesting about that. I'd love to get your thoughts on that, the millennial report from Ellie Mae.
Well, you know, we really haven't delved into that one so much as we had a story this last week about millennials, and it was pretty optimistic. It just showed some of the numbers or what's going on. They're like among the most fruitful group at this point in creating, you know, new households. There was just a lot of numbers in this story. I don't have them handy here. That really kind of changed in that outlook that everybody's had this image of millennials are kind of holding back the market, but it looks like they're starting to tip and want to start buying a lot more than what they had been over these last few years. So
yeah.
We'll see. You know, I guess the big debt Burton, everybody was all concerned about, isn't quite as bad as it had, you know, been thought to be in the past. And so there were a lot of optimistic things in this story. But, you know, I will take a closer look at that Millennial Report because you're right, that's some valuable stuff.
Be valuable. I look forward to getting that next week. Sam, thanks so much for being here, and look forward to hearing more about all that's going on in the marketplace. You do a great job of covering. For those of you that want to learn how to connect with Sam, email him at samgarcia@mortgagedaily.com or go to the website, mortgagedaily.com. Sam, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, David.
You betcha. Well, we heard from Tim talking about the conference from Arch MI. So let's hear from Arch MI, from the marketing department. I believe this is Shawnee. It's got a word for us, and we look forward to hearing what's going on ahead of the herd. I like this.
Thanks, David. Glad to be a sponsor. Spring home buying's underway. The supply is tight and interest rates are rising. Are lenders ready to compete for purchase business, or will they get left behind? Arch MI RateStar is the best way to stay aggressive and stay ahead of the herd. Use our risk-based pricing program to assess individual loan risk more precisely. With RateStar, lenders lead their market the way Arch MI leads the MI industry. Lead with us.
I like that. And we also have John Mayneal with us, who is Vice President of Client Services, with the KPI of the week.
Hello. Thanks very much, David. Always good to be here. And this week's key performance indicator is application to funded cycle time. Since the arrival of TRID, cycle time measurements have obviously come to the forefront, everything from looking at the entire application to funded cycle down to sub-cycles or cycle time between milestones. Everyone wants to compress cycle time, and the beauty of this type of strategic KPI is that it can be tied to operational KPIs that track the tasks or processes within the cycle that contribute to how long or short that cycle is. So operational KPIs can be thought of as the cause, and strategic KPIs are the effect. And balancing and monitoring these key measurements really can drive performance, and this demonstrates again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, David, I will turn it back to you. Thanks very much again.
Love that phrase. What gets measured gets results. What are you measuring, folks? Get a hold of the folks over there at Motivity Solutions. Great team of professionals and, you know, this great team group of people all the way around. Just enjoy that group. Anyway, let's get on to the hot topic segment. I talked a little bit earlier about how we're moving, you know, through the legal side of things. That's working. Gave an update on that. Now we're going to hear from Ari Karam. Again, for those of you that dialed into the program late, apologize for the fact that we did not get you updated, but we had promoted at the Great Rivers Conference that we were going to have Deborah Jasper on talking about marketing and communications, focusing a bit on the millennials as they become more front and center in the marketplace. But we're going to have to reschedule that. She's speaking at the at another conference. And so she was all excited, accepted the invitation, then goes, whoops, we had to reschedule her. So I contacted Ari because there are some significant developments going on, and I want you to hear this interview. So without further ado, Ari Karam of Offutt Kerman, and I really appreciate him taking time to provide this update.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here. I appreciate it. It's an honor.
Give our listeners a quick update on what is happening. A lot of people are not aware of the Financial Choice Act, number one, and they're not aware of some of the recent developments. For those that are not, give us a framework of what the Financial Choice Act in the construct of what it is.
Well, the Financial Choice Act, it's really we're talking Financial Choice Act 2.0, as they call it. The Financial Choice Act 1.0 is the original bill by the Republicans when Obama was president to reform Dodd-Frank and, you know, other financial services laws. Obviously, it went nowhere when Obama was president.
Right.
Now that Trump is president, they're starting it again. The chief architect behind it is Senator Hetzerling. So where the bill is right now, they drafted the bill. It went through subcommittee. It got approved through subcommittee. And now it's going to go to the Senate subcommittee after that. Then it would go to the House and Senate for a vote in whatever form it is at that time, obviously. So far, there have not, as far as I know, been any significant amendments, which does not surprise me necessarily at this point. The amendments will probably come later as you go through the process. But there are a lot of significant points for the industry that people are probably not aware of.
Is it fair to say that this is what could change Dodd-Frank, CFPB? Isn't that at the heart of what the Financial Choice Act is about?
Well, I would say yes and no. How much of a change as far as, you know, your independent community banks and lending, you know, from that perspective, mortgage lending, residential mortgage lending, I don't know how much of a real change is going to be day-to-day. There are some significant changes, but, you know, people who think the LO Comp is going away, you know, don't hold your breath for that. It doesn't really get into that granular detail.
So let's take a look at exactly some of the elements about the Financial Choice Act. So does this have the potential to replace Cordray, Director Cordray of the CFPB?
Yes, it does. One of the aspects of the act, the change from actually 1.0 to 2.0, is 1.0 they wanted to have a commission, so there no longer would be any single director. They've changed that now, and in 2.0 there would be a single director like there is now, but it would be hireable, fireable at will of the president. And obviously, if that happens, you know, there's a very high likelihood, to put it mildly, that Trump will fire Cordray. So, you know, that's actually one of the parts of the bill that would change Dodd-Frank.
But it also has something to do with appropriations, which means the financing of the CFPB. Talk about that.
Right. Well, currently the CFPB, people joke about that it has as much power as the CIA. In some ways it actually does, because its appropriations are similar. In terms of, you know, the typical agency, the way it works is Congress has to appropriate money every year for them to act. So in other words, Congress has this control, right? If it doesn't like what XYZ agency is doing, it just chokes off the money and there's no more money anymore. So they have a lot of power over that agency. Well, the CFPB wasn't constructed that way. It was constructed in a way that that Congress couldn't shut it off. Congress didn't have power over appropriations. So Choice Act 2.0 would give the power that appropriations, but not only over the CFPB, all over other agencies that are similar to the CFPB that control financial services.
If I understand, CFPB is funded by Treasury. Is that correct?
It's got a it's a very complicated process how it cuts money. That honestly, I can tell you, I truly don't understand all the formulae and how it's calculated.
Right.
But it is fully independent from Congress, so Congress can't do anything. You know, look, Cordray can snub his nose as Congress, say, I don't care what you think, and they can't touch him or touch his budget. That's the difference that they want to make sure can't happen again.
Good.
And that's significant because, you know, it really does go to the power of the agency ultimately in having some oversight over it.
So the CFPB is not going away, but let's talk a little bit about rulemaking, some of the current rulemaking going on. What does this potentially do to that?
Well, with the current rulemaking, there is a freeze on it for a period of time. But, you know, in terms of the specific rules, and I'll focus on it because obviously this is a 700-page, you know, bill, and it has all types of effects far, far beyond residential mortgage lending. You know, it goes to trading and securities and capital ownership and all types of stuff like that we won't get into. But as far as mortgage lending, I think one of the things that it really on a very high level does is I think the main thing that it would do, it puts a lot of oversight and checks and balances in the regulatory examination process. It gets rid of some of the supervisory powers of the CFPB, doesn't get rid of the CFPB's rulemaking authority. And I should say there would be technically no CFPB. It would be something called the Consumer Law, the CLEA is what it's going to be called. So it renames the agency, essentially.
Okay. So while there's the change of the name, the general function is still there, which was set out in Dodd-Frank. Okay. So talk a little bit about the unfair deceptive practices. How does this impact that? And if you can explain for those that may not know what the unfair deceptive practices are, first of all, explain that and then explain what this does to that.
Well, David, are you familiar with the Supreme Court's definition of pornography?
Yeah, I know.
I know it when I see it.
Yeah, you know it when you see it. Yes, exactly right.
That's sort of – CFPB is the same rule on UDAP. And I'm joking, but I'm actually not, right? It is really – I know. And there's no rules. They decide after the fact. And I can give you examples after examples where they just have done some pretty – I'm using quote marks when I'm speaking right now – interesting things in defining that. But it really is get you later, got you now, right, type of thing. And so there's obviously significant problems with that because you can't – you can't act based on what you don't know yet. And the CFPB has clearly said we're going to figure it out as we go along through enforcement. It's something everybody's objected to. So they're going to take that away from what would be the CLEA, right? They're going to take that power away altogether. They cannot enforce UDAP. They would allow, like, the Fed to, to enforce UDAP. Some other agencies could enforce UDAP. But the other thing is that UDAP would have to go through rulemaking and have standards. So I think that is one of the biggest things that comes out of the Financial Choice Act 2.0 is I think there would be a lot more credibility and reliability with respect to the enforcement of some of these rules. It's not going to be gotcha kind of thing that we really have been dealing with over the last couple of years. It'll be something where there's a high level of predictability. And, one of the things, if I could go beyond this for a second, if that's okay.
Yeah.
One of the things they're also offering in this legislation is the ability to get advisory opinions. So, I mean, a bank, a lender really could get out there and say, hey, if I want to do this or I want to do that, there'd be the ability to actually get some confirmation they could rely on that this is okay, which obviously anybody who's tried to go to the CFPB and get any type of, clarification knows that's not happening. There would actually be part of the rules would be a process for people to actually do that. And so that combined with, more regulation and rulemaking around UDAP would provide banks with a lot more abilities to determine ahead of time whether what they're doing is actually, lawful or not. And it wouldn't be this, well, let me try it and see what happens, which is where we're stuck right now. So I think from that perspective, the bill is really good for all lenders.
That's good. Again, what is CLE stand for again? So CFPB as a label, as a title goes away, and you suggest that, is it clear that it's going to be CLEA, and what does that stand for?
Consumer Law Enforcement Agency.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what all this means for smaller lenders. There's an exemption in there for the CFPB and enforcement for small lenders, if I understand correctly. Is that right?
Essentially, right now, the CFPB, does have supervisory power over small lenders, and it wouldn't anymore.
Define a small lender. What's a small lender? Because
I guess that's again, it's anybody, I believe, the asset line size is under $10 billion. So they would take away the supervisory power over these what they call non-banks, essentially their definition of non-banks, non-depositories.
Right.
So they would take away all the non-depositories would no longer be supervised by the CFPB. Now, that sounds like we should all cheer and be happy. But 98% of the regulatory exams last year were done by agencies other than the CFPB. So what's the real impact? It sounds like it's a big deal. It's not that big of a deal, honestly, unless I guess you're one of those 2% of those banks. But I don't think it's as big a deal as people are making it, especially for your quote-unquote non-banks.
What about the qualified mortgage flexibility? Talk a little bit about that. Does this give us more flexibility in the QM?
Well, it depends who us is. And this is probably one of the areas that I'm a little bit surprised isn't getting more interest, because it should be something that every quote-unquote non-bank and even small community bank pays a great deal of attention to, because I think it has a transformational potential to change the market in a way adverse to them that could be honestly life-altering, business-altering. If I can explain for a second, essentially what's going to happen is under the bill, any depository institution has the ability to hold a loan if it, quote, intends to hold the loan for the life of the loan. QM pretty much doesn't apply. So every loan, and any loan, as long as they intend to hold it on their books, is QM, period.
Wow.
Okay?
This could put a real disadvantage to the lenders that do not have the ability to portfolio.
Huge disadvantage.
Whoa.
Right, because if you can't hold loans, but think of it even if you can hold loans. Let's say you're a small community bank. How much can you really hold? Right?
Not much.
Right, exactly. Your asset size won't allow it. So who's going to get to actually hold a whole bunch of loans and do a bunch of,
The big banks, yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be a huge advantage to them. And, I mean, if you think about this, Dan Roll, I'm not trying to play Pandora's box or the, you know, parade of horribles here, but let's just be honest. What's going to happen? Let's get down to granular business. You're a realtor. You want to do business with somebody who does what? Can get any deal done, right?
Right.
Guess who can get any deal done now? Big banks. Can your typical non-bank, you know, mortgage broke banker do that who doesn't have a deposit? No, they can't.
This puts a huge advantage to the Jamie Dimons of the world, the Wells Fargos of the world. And
David, do you know who was in the room, by the way, when this got drafted?
No.
I'm not even joking.
Jamie Dimon was in the room.
He apparently is one of the advisors working on it.
Wow. That would change and make a very uneven playing field. Man, that's got to get told. That story right there has got to get highlighted and put out to everybody. Amazing. Well, we've got two aspects of what's going on. So we have legislation, which is the Financial Choice Act, and we have litigation. And I think it's important to just take a minute to back up off of this and explain to the people that we have two angles that are going at the same issue, and that is CFPB.Frank. We have the PHH case, which is being argued, and we have that now being reviewed and by something which I've learned, the NBank.
Well, NBank, or technically, I guess there's some Latin involved in this, it's NBank. So what that really is, typically when a circuit court rules, they do it with a three-judge panel. This is a request through the whole, all of the judges actually review it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here it's actually pretty important if you think about it, because the three-judge panel that reviewed PHH and made the initial determination was two Republicans, one Democrat appointee. The full court, I believe, is 7-4 Democratic appointment. So your majority flips around, right? And given a great deal of latitude, because, you know, one of the things is they can just not rule. They could just say, hey, we don't need to get to these issues.
Right.
They could actually do it with the whole case.
All right, this may be a good point to remind our listeners that just because we're talking in this program about regulatory changes relating to CFPB and Dodd-Frank, there are other regulatory bodies in the market that lenders need to continue to be very mindful of. In fact, it may shift the focus more over to them, specifically the states.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the GSEs, you've got the state regulatory bodies, you've got OTS, FDIC, OCC, you know, you've got all of them that are still out there and still operating that, for the most part won't be will not be affected.
Yeah.
Going back to my point of 98% of the regulatory exams,
that's
not changing. And to some extent, you know, especially as polarized as we are politically these days, you have states going one direction while the federal government's going the other. And I think what you're going to see from a lot of states, especially those that are, as you call them, blue states, so to speak, I think you're going to see those regulators in those states become more ardent in their handling of things, trying to make up for what was perceived as a pulling back from the federal government over this. Although I don't know how much pulling back will actually happen.
I agree. I think it's just way too early to form any kind of opinions of how this may play out. But let's go back to the CFPB. What do you think their strategy is going to be in reaction to some of these proposed changes?
So I think their strategy while this is going on is to keep a low profile when tactically. So in other words, I think they're going to take good targets. You know, when they see something that's going to shock and bother everybody, you know, we recently had last summer the Wells Fargo thing come up and everybody was up in arms about it. And, and that was a champion point. And you've even heard politicians say, what are you talking about? What's wrong with the CFPB? They protected us from phoning accounts. You've heard that battle cry already.
Right.
I expect the CFPB to give their proponents more battle cries. I do think they're going to be a lot lower profile on your PHH type of cases where, you know, the other side can say, great, you know, we have an agency that goes from $3 million or $6 million to $109 million because a guy says so and we can't do anything about him. That's fair, right? So I see them probably backing away from that stuff. And I will tell you, with my clients who have active investigations right now, I have seen things quiet down for the most part. So I don't know if that's just what I'm experiencing because the types of matters I have right now, or if it's something across the board, but I have a feeling they're focusing on targets that are really going to be politically beneficial to them in this debate. Listen, whatever you want to think about the CFPB and what they do, the people that work there, in my experience, are brilliant. And I cannot see them missing this tactical approach. So, right. I mean, they're really smart there.
If this goes through, what level of authority will the CFPB have?
No, they would have enforcement and rulemaking. The only thing that would be taking away is supervisory.
Oh,
so
okay. That's
basically
what, okay.
Doing
good decision. Okay.
Yeah, basically doing exams. And, you know, with that, again, I don't think that that's such a big deal for Main Street.
So the CFPB, if this goes through, will not be able to be doing their own rulemaking, correct?
Right. They're going to essentially have to pass legislation through an economic panel that would do an economic assessment. Again, I think this is a little more politics than actual impact because they essentially do those assessments. I mean, ultimately, right, if we're all in cahoots together, hey, we're going to do this. Oh, yeah, we agree. That's a good idea. You know, I don't – again, if depending on who's in there, I don't think it's going to make such a huge difference about things. I think the big things are – you know, the two of the big things are there's actually going to be like an appeals process.
Right.
So if you are going through an exam and you don't like what they're doing, or you're, you know, you can actually appeal the examination results. Also with an investigation enforcement, you know, right now if you go through an enforcement action with the CFPB, you've got to go through all the administrative internal stuff first, and then you get to go to court, you know, 2 years and how many millions of dollars later. Well, if you don't like it, you could actually, and this applies to a CID as well, the way the legislation's drafted, you would actually be able to appeal that and go straight to court. So there would be a level of oversight, which I think is really necessary personally. And I think that you would have those that avenue, and that's part of what the legislation would do. So I think there are some really beneficial, important parts of it as well.
This sounds like it's a mixed bag, some good, some bad. Definitely bad for small independent mortgage bankers if this passes without those two sentences in there. But let's talk about another possibility. There was some talk early on that Trump might fire Cordray, and then we saw that go away, or at least it hasn't been talked about much. And then this last week with the headline of Trump firing Director Comey from the FBI, it makes you really wonder if that's back on the table as a possibility. I mean, there's a lot of things underway here, but what is the possibility of Trump firing Director Cordray?
I'm not going to get into the predicting what Trump's going to do tomorrow game. He could, and I know there were talks earlier about him doing it. It would surprise me now if he would do it, only because, you know, we've got the Financial Choice Act pending, you've got PHH pending, you know, you could have a resolution to this. But then again, you know, it's Trump, and he may get sick of waiting, and just, you know, Cordray gives him an excuse, and he does it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've seen something about this president that no matter which political side, he does what he wants to do, right? I mean, that's at the end of the day, he's going to do it, and he's not going to be scared about what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He could. He certainly could, and that would touch off a very interesting legal constitutional battle. But he might do it. So I just can't say if he will.
I know there's a lot pending yet, so it's hard to predict what's going to happen. But based on what you know at this point, what are some of the takeaways as we wrap up this interview?
So I'd say first, you know, whatever bill does go in, because, you know, it's not, this is not the final, right?
Right.
But whatever ultimately passes, because we know what's not in there now, we're not going back to the good old days, not even close.
Right.
That's one. I think the changes that are beneficial that are proposed generally would be additional oversight to the CFPB, which would be, you know, the CLEA, less power, and I think more options for lenders to have a greater degree of predictability of what the laws are and how they will be enforced. All really beneficial things. There's a cloud in the silver lining, so to speak, which is small lenders should definitely be looking at these pieces of legislation and making sure their voice is heard. Again, I don't know who or what or how people are going to advocate on your behalf, but if it was my business and it was something that's potentially huge to it, I would want to know what I have to say is being said. So I would not rely on other people for that. And you know, lastly, again, the legislation is going to change. It always does. But that's when you want to have the voice in it. You know, a lot of people after Dodd-Frank passed initially, David, were complaining about this, complaining about that, and you kind of scratch your head and said, well, when the law was being written, where were you, right? Because that's when you should have been talking. We're getting a second bite at the apple as an industry, especially the small and independent community lenders. they should be talking now. This is exactly the time where they should be getting involved, so that pieces of this legislation that, you know, people may not understand the impact to them, don't get somehow missed and put in, and then the outcome is something that is not favorable to pieces of the industry.
For those that want to talk to you directly and get your insights and retain you if they're dealing with issues, what's the best way to get a hold of you, Ari?
It's probably email is the best way. If you want, I can provide that to you.
Yes, yes.
Akaren, A-K-A-R-E-N, at Offit Kerman. That's kind of long, but it's spelled like the words off it, and then K-U-R-M-A-N. So offitkerman.com. And people can also reach me on my cell at 917-312-2294.
Well, there you go, folks. That was an interesting interview that I recorded on Saturday with Ari Karen. Very appreciative of Ari taking time and coming on and giving us an update. A lot going on there, especially paying attention to what's going on as it relates to the disadvantage community banks, independent mortgage bankers, smaller lenders generally could have as a result of that language that gives those that have huge capital base ability to declare a loan as a portfolio loan. And that allows them to just sidestep and get away from all QM. You think about that, the impact that it could have is significant. Appreciate you being here with us this week. It's been fun to do this podcast. I enjoy doing it. And it's a wonderful give back to the industry. Next week, we've got Sarah Russell and Earl Amin coming on with Beyond. Go Beyond 10 is the name of their company. We're talking about business and, or employee engagement. That's their specialty. We look at the lack of engagement, what we can do to gain or get increase employee engagement. We're going to talk to the two of them. I've been getting to know them. Very excited about what they do. They're two consultants that are having a big impact, working with some of the biggest corporations on employee engagement. So be sure to come back next week for the guests on the Hot Topic segment, Sarah Russell and Earl Amin. Good to have you with us, everybody. Have a great week. Look forward to having you back again next week. And be sure to tell others about the podcast. Thank you. See you back here next week.
This has been Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us again next week, and thank you for listening.